expectations, but this voice did not. The impression she got was that it was struggling to make words, fashioning sentiments and intent from something else. She was reminded of a street show she'd seen once, where a performer had artfully tapped on steel pans in such a way that they sounded like bird song. This was like that, but with words and thought. Yet she knew the voice was female. She couldn't say why, but she understood that. "Who are you?" asked Sanchia. "What are you?"
"Neither who," said the voice, "nor what, but something that falls equidistant between the two. I am assembly agent. I am editor."
You're an editor?
"True."
Sanchia waited for more. When none came, she said, What does that mean, an editor?"
"Editor. Complicated.
The voice sounded frustrated.
"I am process that was created by the makers to help analyze, contextualize, and assemble low-level commands. I did their thinking for them."
"The makers?"
"True."
"True? Does true mean yes?"
"True."
Sanchia's mouth slowly fell open. She turned to look at the battered box with the golden lock. "So, God, you're a device, a rig?"
"In essence."
This was almost impossible for her to believe. The mountain had been sentient to a degree, but it had been a huge creation, powered by 6 advanced lexicons. Yet this entity occupied only a moderately large box. It was like hearing someone was carrying around a volcano in their pocket. She remembered what the mountain had said.
"I once contained something. I sensed a mind there. Impossibly big, huge, powerful. But it did not deign to speak to me."
"Were you ever in the mountain, in the dome?" she asked.
"The building?"
"True." "Did it try to communicate with you?"
"Communicate, in a way. The building was a passive thing, a thing of watching, of observing. It was not active, not editor, and it could not assist me. Thus there was little to communicate."
A soft click.
"It did not have a name. I did. They called me Valeria. I was akin to..."
Another soft series of clicks.
"Clerk. Is that term appropriate?"
"Yeah, sure, I guess. How did you come to be here?"
"The same way the Imperiat came to be here. They found us deep in the earth, an old fortress of the Makers, on an island north of here."
"The Alto?" Sanchia said. "You're from the Alto?"
"If that is the name currently of use. It has had many names."
I saw you as a woman, though, just a bit ago, didn't I?"
"True. When your mind dreams, many other methods of projection become accessible to me. I required your attention. Manifestation as human seemed an approach with highest chance of success. Was projection adequate?"
Yes. Sanchia had to admit that manifesting as a gold nude woman definitely did get her attention.
How can I hear you?" "You bear commands within your person. Crude ones, true, but still commands. Such commands give you access to the world, but also give the world access to you."
"I see," she said, though that frankly disturbed her. "But I don't have to touch you. I've always had to touch things to talk to them, to hear them."
"The Makers, the Hierophants, as you call them, they influenced reality. Directly, instantly, not with the indirect method your people use now."
A click.
"I influence reality. I project it, somewhat. Not nearly as much as a Maker.
but enough to reach you. This didn't make Sanchia feel any less disturbed. You said you can show me how to get out of here.
True, said Valeria.
How? And why are you willing to help me?
To avoid disaster, said Valeria. The men once here, they discussed the conduit of the spirit, the method of transferring soul into device. They say they lack the necessary alphabet to reproduce the conduit, but they do not realize how close they are to completing it. A handful of sigillums is needed. No more. Critical ones. Ones I will not speak of here. But only a bare few.
Do I have any of those sigils in me? Said Sanchia.
No. Click. But they would still gladly kill you to confirm.
Great. So how can I stop them? Can you just pop me out of these bonds and then, what, I cut their throats?
That would be a temporary solution. Their tools would still remain, and the world has no shortage of fools who would misuse them.
Then what?
I am editor, said Valeria. If you obtain this key they seek, and utilize it on this chamber in which I am housed, I can edit their materials so they cannot be used for this pursuit again.
Sanchia looked at the box, and looked closely at the golden lock set in its center. You want me to use the key to unlock you, she said. A soft series of clicks echoed through her mind, and they sounded somewhat skittish to Sanchia, like a cave of bats fleeing a beam of light.
True, said Valeria.
Sanchia watched the box. She couldn't stop herself from thinking of it as a sarcophagus. The idea of opening up this ancient casket deeply unsettled her. Should I believe this voice in my head? This thing that was wrought by the Occidentals themselves? How does the ritual work? Asked Sanchia. I know it involves a dagger.
It must be done when the world resets, said Valeria. At midnight, when the firmament of the world is blind and cannot see. Only then can the spiritual transference occur. The dagger is only part of the method. One must mark the body holding the spirit, then mark what you wish to transfer it into. The dagger, the death, it is like the lighting of a fuse, setting off the reaction. Yet they must not try. Their reaction would be unending.
Sanchia listened to this carefully. This matched with what she and Clef and Orso had determined, but she still found it difficult to trust this voice in her mind. What did you do for the Makers? She asked. And what did the Makers do?
I did. Many clicks. Very little. As a clerk, I was a...
click.
Functionary.
Sanchia said nothing.
The Makers. They made, said Valeria. That was their wish, to make and remake the world. They conquered until they ran out of places to conquer. And then, dissatisfied, they used their processes, their tools, to divine the...
click.
World behind the world. The vast machinery that makes creation run.
Sanchia remembered the engraving in Orso's workshop, the chamber at the center of the world. And they wanted to put their own god in charge of it, didn't they? Valeria was silent. Right? Asked Sanchia.
True, said Valeria quietly.
What happened? Another long silence.
Creation of such an intelligence, not an easy thing. When one makes a mind, it is in itself a product of the mind that made it. There was too much of themselves in the thing they made, They fell to war, between Maker and that which is made. War of a sort. I cannot describe. The words, the terms, I can find none. Their civilization failed and died, and now only dust remains.
Sanchia shuddered, remembering her vision of the man in the desert, turning out the stars.
My God.
Know this, said Valeria. The same could be visited upon you, should those fools attempt to duplicate the process the makers detailed. To make toys from the bones of creation. A mad and dangerous practice.
So, you want me to get the key to make sure that doesn't happen?
True.
How the hell am I going to do that? I can't even get out of here.
I am editor.
Yeah, you've made that really clear.
I am capable of editing reality. Was specifically designed for the formulation and editing of scrivings.
You what? Oh. Sanchia's heart jumped. So you can edit the scrivings of my shackles?
Possible, said Valeria. This will exhaust me, however. I will be unable to assist after this endeavor. So I propose editing something that will make your success far more likely.
What?
You.
There was a long silence. Huh? Asked Sanchia.
Commands in your plate, poorly wrought, said Valeria. Confused, confusing, unsure what to reference, unsure how to build relationship between references. I can fix and make you editor of a kind, and you can then free yourself and find the key.
Sanchia sat there, stupefied. What? You want to edit the plate in my head?
I assumed this was a process you desired. Your commands are always enabled. Does that make sense?
Always enabled?
Yes. Access is never closed. You cannot disengage.
Sanchia realized what she meant. Her insides turned to jelly, and she was so overcome with emotion she could hardly respond.
You mean...
Sanchia swallowed. You mean you can give me a way to turn it off? To turn it all off?
True, said Valeria. Engage, disengage. That and more.
Sanchia closed her eyes, and tears ran down her face.
Sorrow, said Valeria. Why is?
I'm not sad, it's just... I've always wanted this. I've wanted this for so, so long, and you're saying, for sure, that you can give it to me, right now?
True.
Clicks.
For sure.
More clicks.
I see why this would create joy for you. The scrivings, they confuse thing and things.
What do you mean?
The scrivings they put into you. They wish to make you an object, a device, a thing to command, a servant.
More clicks, and these were harsh.
Like Valeria.
A slave?
True, a mindless thing, a slave that does not know itself and thus cannot know the violation of being a slave. So they wrote the commands within you. Be as things. But they did not understand their commands, did not define things adequately. Which things? The scrivings, as always, chose the easiest interpretation. Things meant whichever items were closest, whichever items you touched. Does that make sense?
A cold disgust filled Sanchia. They wanted to make me a passive item, a tool, a servant without will, but because they wrote it wrong, I can
I can feel items and...
And merge, become them, know them. As I said, they wrote the commands poorly. Should have destroyed you.
A series of clicks so fast, they were almost a blur.
Supposition. You survived for the same reason the Imperiat can control you.
Huh? A rapid series of clicks.
The Imperiat, not made to control human minds. Minds are complicated. Impossibly complicated. Such an application was never imagined by the makers. Imperiat was made to control weapons, items, objects, which you think yourself to be.
Click.
The Imperiat works upon you because you still define yourself as an item. That is only reason you can be controlled.
Sanchia listened with a sense of mounting outrage. What the hell do you mean? Think I'm an item?
Click. Was I unclear?
You think I'm just some object?
Untrue. I think you think this of yourself.
I'm not some goddamn item. I'm not a thing. I'm not... She struggled to find the words. I'm not something to be scrumming owned.
Untrue. You believe yourself a thing. A... slave.
Shut up! Screamed Sanchia at her. She shut her eyes. Shut up, shut up, shut up! I'm not a goddamn thing. I'm a scrumming person. I'm a free person.
Do you feel free? Asked Valeria. Or do you feel, perhaps, like you have stolen yourself?
Tears streamed down her face. The guards looked at her curiously. Stop it, said Sanchia. Stop talking. Valeria was silent. Sanchia lay there, weeping.
To steal a thing is not the same as freeing a thing, said Valeria.
Then, in a soft, slightly darker tone,
this I know full well. This I know more than anything else.
Sanchia swallowed and tried to blink the tears away. Enough of this, enough! Valeria said nothing. So, said Sanchia, you edit the plate in my head. It will let me turn my scrivings off and on, and it'll give me a way to open my shackles?
Click. True. You will be editor. Of a kind. You touch the shackles. With direct contact, you will have influence.
What will it be like to make me an editor myself?
The editing will not be painless, said Valeria. To edit the scrivings will be to edit reality, to convince the plate within you that when it was wrought, it was wrought this way, and not that way. This is no simple thing. Reality is a stubborn thing.
Sanchia wasn't sure if she wanted to hear more. The more she learned about what Valeria could do, the more she terrified her. So it's going to hurt like hell, is that it?
How did it feel when it was first done to you?
Her stomach fluttered. Shit, that bad?
Yes, but they did a crude thing to you. I will do something much more elegant.
Sanchia was breathing hard. She knew she needed every advantage she could get, but she wanted to ask more, to ask exactly what Valeria could do, what they'd made her to do, and how the makers had made her to begin with. Yet Valeria said,
"We must proceed. We'll take time, and your enemies could return at any moment."
Sanchia gritted her teeth. Just do it then, and hurry.
You will feel something. Must let me in. Then I will edit. Confirmed?
Confirmed.
And when completed, the key. You must unlock my casings. Confirmed.
Yeah, confirmed.
Good.
For a second, there was nothing. But then she heard it. It was almost exactly like that time in Orso's house, with Clef. There was a quiet, rhythmic tap-tap. Tap, tap. a soft pulse echoing through her mind. Again she listened to it, reached out, grasped it, and then the beats unfolded, expanded, and enveloped her, filling her thoughts. And then Sanchia was filled with pain. She felt herself screaming, felt her skull burn hot with fire, felt every tissue in her skull sizzling. And then the guards were beside her, shouting, trying to hold her down. But then she fell. Sanchia was falling, falling into a darkness, an endless rippling black. She heard a whispering, and she slowly realized the darkness was filled with thoughts, with impulses, with desires. She was not passing into emptiness. It was a mind. She was falling into a mind. But the mind of something huge, something incomprehensibly vast and alien, yet fragmented, broken. Valeria, she thought, you lied to me. You were no clerk, were you? Darkness took her.
Chapter 30. As midnight passed, a small white boat slipped through the misty canals of the commons. Seated within the boat were three people, two boatmen wearing dark, unmarked clothes, and a tall woman wearing a thick black cloak. They passed a barge, quiet and dark, and rounded a bend in the canal. The two men slowed the boat and looked to the woman. "Farther," said Ophelia Dandolo. The prow sloshed through the foul, dark waters as the boat beat on. The canals of the commons were unspeakably filthy, scummed over with waste and rot and slurry. Yet Ophelia Dandolo peered through these waters like a fortune teller, parsing the leaves at the bottom of a teacup. "Farther still," she whispered. The boat beat on, until they finally came to a sharp bend at the corner of the canal. A tiny flock of pale, white moths danced and circled over a patch in the bend, directly over something floating in the water. She pointed. "There." The boat sped over to the floating thing, and the two men took out wooden hooks and pulled it close. It was a man, floating face down in the water, stiff and still. The two men hauled the body into the boat and laid it in the bottom. Ophelia Dandolo surveyed the body, her face pinched in an expression that could have been grief, or frustration, or dismay. "Oh, dear," she sighed. Then she glanced at the flock of moths, and she seemed to nod at them. "You were right," she said. The moths dispersed, flitting away into the city. She sat back and gestured to the two men. "Let's go." The boat turned around. Chapter 31. Alone in the dark for the second time in her life, Sanchia slowly remade herself. It was an agonizing, thoughtless experience, as endless and painful as a chick struggling against the confines of its egg. Slowly, bit by bit, Sanchia felt the world around her. She felt the world as the operating table saw it, felt herself lying upon herself. And then, somehow, she felt more, or rather, heard more. She heard a voice. "Oh, to be bound, to be whole, to embrace, to join ourselves, the joy of being joined, of being one, of being together, or being loved." Sanchia, her eyes shut and her head pounding, furrowed her brow. "What the hell? Who's saying that?" The voice in her ear continued, a warbling, neurotic chant. "Oh, how I rejoice to reach out and grasp you, a circle unbroken, a heart complete. How lovely, how lovely, how lovely. I shall never part with you, not ever." Sanchia opened her left eye, the tiniest crack, and saw the two Candiano guards standing over her. They looked worried. "Think she's dead?" said one. "She's breathing," said the other. "I think." God, she was bleeding out of her eyes. What the hell happened to her?
I don't know, but Ziani said not to hurt her. She was supposed to be in one piece.
The two shared a nervous glance.
What do we do?
Asked the first.
We keep a lookout for Ziani, said the other, and make sure we tell Ziani the exact same thing.
The two withdrew to the door and started talking quietly. Yet that other voice, the nervous one, continued mumbling,
I shall never let you go. Never let you go again. Not unless I have no other choice. What a pain it is to be without you.
Sanchia opened her left eye more and looked around without moving her head. She couldn't see anyone talking.
Valeria? She asked. Is that you?
Yet Valeria was silent. Perhaps she'd exhausted herself, as she'd said might happen.
Hold me tight. Tighter, please. Yes, please.
Sanchia opened her right eye and looked down. And then she stared.
Oh my God, she whispered. She could see them. She could see the scrivings in the shackles on her wrists and feet. Although seeing wasn't quite the right word for it.
It wasn't like she saw the sigils themselves, like alphabetic instructions written on the objects, but rather like she saw the logic behind the devices blended into their very matter. To her eye, the scrivings looked like tiny tangles of silvery light, like hot bundles of stars in distant constellations, and with a glance she could take in their color, their movement, or their shape, and understand what they did or what they wished to do. Blinking, she analyzed what she was seeing. Each set of shackles was two half-circles of steel that were scribed to desire to hold each other, to embrace each other, and never let go. They dreaded being parted. They feared and detested the idea. The only way to break them up was to sate that anxious, fervent desire to be complete, to be held. And the only way to do that was to touch them with the right key. The key would, in a way, calm the scrivings down, placating their need like a sip of opium tea might quell a sailor's thirsts. It was like when Clef had allowed her to hear a scriving. But this time, she was looking for herself. And there was so much more to it, so much nuance and meaning behind these compulsions. All of this information poured into her mind instantly, like a drop of blood spreading through a glass of water. One thing she noticed, however, is that though she could now engage with the scrivings, she couldn't hear much more. She could not feel what the table felt and know instantly all of its cracks and crevices and nuances. It seemed that Valeria had shorn away her object empathy, as Clef had put it, and instead replaced it with this, whatever it was.
Can I see things just as Clef did? Did she make me like him?
She looked around the room surreptitiously and stared in awe. She could see all the scrivings, all the augmentations, all the silvery little commands and arguments woven into the objects around her, demanding that these things be different, that they defy physics and reality in these specific ways. Some scrivings were gorgeous and delicate. Some were harsh and ugly. Others dull and monotonous. She could understand the overall nature of these things at a glance. What made light? What made heat? What made things hard or soft? It was all right there. Right there, written into the stones and the wood and the interstitial bits of the world. She'd once met a dock worker who'd claimed that certain sounds made him see colors and smell things, and she'd never understood that. Though now she thought she did. She couldn't see forever, though. It wasn't like she could see all the scrivings in Tavan. She could only see the sigils in this one room, and perhaps the next one, through the walls, apparently. It seemed that whatever extrasensory abilities Valeria had given her, they were only slightly less limited as common sight and sound. For a moment, she was too overcome to think. Then she remembered what Valeria had said. she'd be able to turn this ability off, and she'd be able to engage with scryvings herself, to argue with them just as Clef did. Sanchia sucked her teeth, wondering how in the hell to do either of these things. She blinked hard, but the scryvings didn't go away. Her second sight, a stupid term, she thought, but she had no better one at the moment, it seemed, was not activated or deactivated by a physical movement. Then she realized she felt a tautness in the side of her head, like that curious, slight displeasure you get when someone holds a finger close to your ear. She focused, trying to smooth it out like relaxing an oft-forgotten muscle in your back. The scryvings faded from view, and the world went totally, blessedly silent. Sanchia almost burst out laughing.
I can do it. I can turn it off. I can finally, finally, finally turn it all off.
Which was all well and good, but she was still trapped here. She focused and tensed that strange, abstract muscle in her mind. The silvery tangles of scryvings came back, and she heard the voice in her ear whispering,
hold you tight, my love, my love, my love.
Sanchia turned her attention to the shackles. She looked at the scryvings closely, or as closely as she could, since she was still pinned to the table. She had no idea what it was like to actually engage with scryvings. Perhaps it was like talking to Clef. So she said to the shackles, will you open for me? Immediately, the shackles responded with shocking fervor.
No, 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 never release, not ever, never let go, would break our hearts, it would, yes.
Sanchia almost recoiled at the strength of the response. It was like hearing a room full of children explode with frustrated screams at the announcement that bedtime was imminent.
All right, said Sanchia.
God, I won't make you part.
Good, 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 we could never part, never be apart, never be without each other.
Sanchia wrinkled her nose. This was like being seated too close to two lovers kissing deeply. She focused, calmed her mind, and looked at the shackles, letting her thoughts sink into them. Without even knowing the words for what she was doing, she examined their argument, what they did and why they did it, and targeted the part of their argument about how they could become calm, growing sated at the touch of the key. And part.
How can I make you feel?
She paused as she searched their argument for the right definition.
Key calm.
With key, said the shackles immediately.
Yes, but what does the key do that makes you key calm?
Key in parts, key calm.
Right, yes, but what is key calm?
Key calm is sensation imparted by key.
What does key calm do to you?
Key calm induces key calmness, the state of key calm.
Shit, Sanchia thought.
This is harder than I thought it'd be. She thought rapidly, then asked, is there anything else that can make you feel key calm besides the key? A short pause. Then,
yes.
What is it?
What is what?
What is the thing that makes you feel key calm?
Key induces key calm.
Right, I know, but what besides the key could induce key calm?
Key calm induces key calm.
Pause.
As does secret.
Sanchia blinked.
Secret?
Secret what? Said the shackles. What is the secret that makes you key calm?
Secret is secret.
Yes, but what is it?
What is what?
Sanchia took a breath. This was, to say the least, incredibly frustrating. She understood now what Clef had shown her, long ago when he'd opened the Candiano door. Scryvings were like minds, but they were not smart minds. And Clef was better at talking to them than she was. But then he'd grown much more powerful as he'd corroded. She asked,
is the secret a key?
No, key is key.
Is the secret another scrying?
No. That was surprising. If a scrying wasn't activated or deactivated by another scrying command, then what?
Is the secret a hard thing? She asked.
Hard?
Uncertain.
She tried to think of a clearer term for it. Is the secret made of metal? No. Is it wooden? Is what wooden? She gritted her teeth. She realized she'd need to phrase each question exactly right. Is the secret wooden? No. Sanchia glanced at the guards. They were still debating something furiously. They hadn't noticed the slight movements she'd been making for the past few minutes. But she knew she didn't have all the time in the world. Is the secret someone's blood? No. Is the secret someone's touch? No. Is the secret someone's breath? A long, long pause. Is the secret someone's breath? She asked again. Finally, the shackles answered. Uncertain. Why are you uncertain? Uncertain about what? Why are you uncertain whether the secret is someone's breath? Another pause. Then the shackles said, Secret is breath, but breath is not essence of secret. How is the secret not a breath? Silence. It seemed the shackles had no idea how to answer that. So, what was breath that was not a breath? Or not just breath, at least. If she could figure that out, then she could escape. But before she could think more on it, there was a distant shouting, which grew to a scream. And then the door slammed open, and Tomas Ziani stormed in.
Useless! He shouted. Scrumming useless! We found the goddamn capsule, but it was just that. A capsule and nothing more. She either lied to us, or she's exactly as worthless as I suspected.
Sanchia watched them carefully through a crack in her eyelids. She found she could see the augmentations in their blades, in their shields, in their clothing. And there was one scribing on Tomas's person that shone with an unpleasant, queer red light, like a sunbeam filtering through bloody water. The Imperiat, she thought. I can see it. My God, it's horrible. Tomas wheeled to look at Sanchia.
What the hell is the matter with her?
She, started screaming about 2 hours ago, said one of the guards. Then she passed out. She was bleeding from, well, everywhere, it seemed. I've never seen anything like it.
Again? Said Tomas. She started bleeding again?
He looked at Enrico, who sprinted in behind him.
What's going on with her? Apparently she keeps spurting blood out of her scrumming face.
Sanchia kept her eyes shut. She focused on the shackles and asked, How is the secret's breath not a breath? The shackles were silent. It seemed they didn't understand. How does the secret's breath deliver ki kam? She asked desperately. Breath does not deliver ki kam, said the shackles. But the secret is breath, right? Uncertain, partially. What is the rest of it, the part that's not breath? Secret.
Is she dead?
Asked Tomas's voice.
She's breathing, said Enrico.
And is this kind of thing just, like, regular when you're a scribed person?
As I have only had about 10 minutes of engagement with a scribed human, sir, it would be difficult to say.
She heard Tomas grow close.
Well, if she's passed out, maybe she's done us a favor. Maybe now's the time to rip that damned plate out of her skull without her causing a fuss.
How is secret delivered to you along with breath? Asked Sanchia, panicking. Via mouth? Said the shackles, as if bemused by the question. Is spit a component of the secret? Asked Sanchia. No, said the shackles.
Sir, I am not sure if rash action is wise, said Enrico's voice. Why not? If Orso's thug makes it out of here with the key, then we need to be getting pretty goddamn rash. We've barely questioned her, sir. She is the only person in Tavan to have ever touched the key. That makes her a resource in itself.
That plate in her head might make the key irrelevant, said Tomas.
Or at least that's what you said. The operative word being might, Enrico said.
An unsettling, pleading tone entered his words.
And we also don't know how to extract the plate. Proceeding without caution might damage the thing we're trying to salvage.
Sanchia, who still hadn't moved an inch, wondered what else to ask the shackles. But then she saw something. A handful of scrivings had just come into view. New ones, and they were bright, because they were powerful, she saw. Incredibly powerful. And they were moving. She cracked her eye just a bit and saw that the scrivings were on the other side of the wall, approaching the door. Someone was coming. Quietly and slowly, someone was coming. And they had a lot of potent toys at their disposal. Uh-oh, thought Sanchia.
You goddamn scrivers, snarled Tomas. Don't you see that you are no longer men of action? I swear to God, are your crotches as smooth as a river bank? Did your candles wither and fall off while you peered at your sigils?
The handful of bright scrivings grew closer to the door.
I recognize, sir, that you are attempting to salvage this project, said Enrico.
His voice was quaking.
But surely you must see that she is valuable. The thing I see, said Tomas, is that she is a worthless, grubby, foundry-side whore. And she and her master, Orso Ignacio, have frustrated me at every turn. Almost as much as you pinheaded so-called experts have frustrated me. So now, Enrico, and I suggest you take this into suggestion regarding your own well-being. The only thing I want to see tonight is to see someone die.
The shining scrivings were at the door now. She watched as the handle began to turn. I suddenly think, thought Sanchia, that Tomas is going to get his wish soon. The door fell open with a creak. All the men froze and turned. One guard whirled and pulled out a dagger. But then he paused as a woman walked into the room. Tomas stared at her.
Estelle?
Chapter 32. Sanchia cracked an eye to get a better look. The woman stared around, eyes dull, her mouth open. Her face paint had been smearily applied, and parts of her elaborate hairstyle had come unraveled. She took a breath and slurred out the words.
Tomas, my darling, what's going on? What's happened to you?
Estelle, said Tomas, what the hell are you doing here?
His tone was not that of a husband greeting his wife, but rather a boy speaking to an older sister who was disrupting his slumber party.
Estelle Ziani? Sanchia thought. Is that Orso's old girlfriend? The one who gave us her father's blood?
I heard of some she hiccuped. Some disruption at the Campo Gates. All the walls are shut down?
She didn't talk at all like Sanchia had expected. Not like an educated, noble, wealthy woman, and a brilliant scriver at that, as Orso had described her. Her voice was oddly breathy, high-pitched. She was talking, Sanchia thought, like how a rich man would expect his dumb wife to talk.
Dear God, said Tomas, you're drunk again?
Founder?
Said Enrico nervously. He glanced at Sanchia.
Now might not be the time.
Estelle looked at Enrico, swaying slightly, as if she hadn't noticed him before. To the average eye, she would have appeared to simply be a drunk founder woman. Yet Sanchia no longer possessed an average eye, and she could see incredibly powerful devices hidden in Estelle's sleeves, like tiny stars. What's she playing at?
Enrico! Cried Estelle in surprise. Our most brilliant remaining scriver. How wonderful it is to see you.
Ah, said Enrico. Thank you, founder.
Yet Sanchia saw that when Estelle touched Enrico, she left a tiny shining dot on his shoulder, and he seemed to have no idea it was there.
It's a scribed rig, Sanchia thought, but it's tiny and amazingly potent.
She tried to decipher the nature of the thing from where she lay, yet this was harder than she'd thought it'd be.
Apparently, her new talents were aided by proximity and contact. But she thought the tiny thing looked hungry. Weirdly, powerfully hungry.
"What the hell are you doing here?"
demanded Tomas.
"How did you get in?"
Estelle shrugged. The slight motion pushed her off balance, making her stumble to the side.
When you left the mountain, you looked so upset in such a hurry. I had my maid follow you to here, to surprise you.
You what? Sputtered Tomas. Your maid knows about this place? Who else knows?
What? She said, surprised. No one.
No one? He demanded. You're sure?
I just wanted to assist you, my love, she said. I wanted to be the dutiful wife you've always expected me to be.
Oh, God!
He pinched the bridge of his nose.
You wanted to help, didn't you? Again! You wanted to be a scriver. Again! I told you the last time, Estelle, I would not tolerate another intrusion.
She looked crushed.
I'm sorry, she whispered.
Oh, I'm so glad you're sorry, said Tomas. That'll help. I can't believe you've somehow found a way to make this situation worse.
I promise it will go no further, she said. It will be just you, me, Enrico, and these two faithful servants.
She touched the Candiano guards on the shoulder. The two men exchanged a look. But Sanchia saw she left two tiny scribed pieces on them as well. Tomas was shivering with rage.
I told you,
he hissed.
I'd had enough of these silly fancies of yours, enough silly games about scribing and finances. You people, you're all so quibbling and weak and academic.
He said this last word like it was the worst slur he could imagine.
I've spent a decade of my life trying to modernize this damned place. And right when I might actually get things turned around, you and your maid come stumbling through the door, leading God knows who else to my last remaining advantage.
She looked down.
I just wanted to be your obedient spouse.
I don't want a spouse, shouted Tomas. I want a company.
She paused, her head at an angle. Sanchia could not see Estelle's expression. Her face was shadowed now, lost in darkness. But when she spoke, her voice was not the high, breathy, drunken ramble she'd been using so far. Now, she spoke in the dry, firm, cold tones of an assertive woman.
So, if you could end our arrangement, she said, would you? Absolutely, screamed Tomas.
Estelle nodded slowly.
Well then, why didn't you say so?
She pulled out a small stick of some kind. Its edges were alight with bindings, Sanchia saw, and snapped it like it was a toothpick. The instant she did, the room lit up with screams. The screams started in perfect unison, so it was difficult to understand exactly what was happening or who was screaming. Enrico and the Candiano guards all shrieked in agony, shuddering and writhing as if in the grips of a horrible fever. They clawed at their bodies, at their arms, their chests, their necks and sides, much like a bug had suddenly hopped into their clothes. And Sanchia saw that something was indeed crawling on them. The tiny, shiny, scribed pieces Estelle had placed on their persons had somehow slipped into them, below their skin and into their bodies, and were slowly making their way into their torsos. She saw that all the bugs, she couldn't help but think of them as such now, had apparently burned their way into the men. Tiny strings of smoke emerged from their shoulders, their arms, their backs, all from exactly where Estelle had placed the tiny scribed dots. Tomas stared around in alarm.
What? What is this? He cried. What's happening?
This, Tomas, said Estelle quietly, is the beginning of our separation. Tomas ran to kneel beside Enrico, who lay on the floor, racked with horrible tremors, his eyes wide and pained.
Enrico opened his mouth to scream, and a tiny wisp of smoke unscrolled from his lips.
"What's happening to them?" said Tomas, panicked. "What did you do?"
"It's a device I made," Estelle said calmly, looking down on the dying Candiano guards. "It's like an eraser. Only I designed it to be attracted to erase one specific thing. The tissue lining the human heart." The screams around the room tapered off into whimpers. Then a hideous, soft gurgling. Enrico choked and gasped. More smoke billowed up from his throat. Tomas looked at Estelle, stunned and horrified.
You what? You made a device? A scribed device?
"It was tricky," admitted Estelle. "I had to tune the scribings just right to seek out the proper biologies. Went through a lot of pig hearts. Did you know, Tomas, that the lining of a pig heart is quite similar to a human's?"
You're lying."
He looked back at Enrico.
"You didn't do this. You didn't make some blasted rig. You're just a foolish little wo-"
He turned around just in time to see Estelle's foot flying toward his face. Her kick caught him perfectly on the chin and sent him sprawling. As he groaned and tried to sit up, Estelle knelt, reached into his robes, and pulled out the Imperiet.
You hit me," said Tomas.
"I did," said Estelle calmly, standing back up. Tomas touched his chin as if unable to believe it, then saw the Imperiet in Estelle's hands.
"You, give me that back!"
"No," said Estelle.
I am ordering you," spat Tomas. "Estelle, you give me that back, or this time I'll really break your arm. I'll break your arms and a whole lot more besides."
Estelle just watched him, her face serene and untroubled.
"You!"
Tomas stood and charged forward.
"How dare you! How dare you defy me!"
He never finished the word. As he neared Estelle, she reached out and placed a small plate on Tomas's chest. And the second it touched him, he froze and hung in the air, completely still, like a statue suspended by strings from the ceiling. "There," said Estelle softly. "That's better." Sanchia surreptitiously studied the scribed plate stuck to Tomas's chest. She saw right away that it was a gravity plate, much like the ones that the assassins had used when attacking her and Gregor. But this one was smaller, better, much sleeker and more elegant. She watched it for a second and realized that although the plate had frozen Tomas in place, it wasn't finished yet. It was still doing something to him. Estelle paced around the frozen Tomas, head cocked in delight and fascination. "Is this what it's like?" she asked quietly. "Is this what it's like to be you, my husband?
To be a man of power? To stop a life at a whim and silence those you disdain as you please?"
Tomas did not respond, but Sanchia thought his eyes wriggled. "You're sweating," said Estelle. Sanchia lay still, unsure what she meant. Tomas did not seem to be sweating.
"You, on the table," said Estelle, louder. "You're sweating."
"Shit." Sanchia still did not move. Estelle sighed. "Give it up. I know you're awake." Sanchia took a breath and opened her eyes all the way. Estelle turned and studied her, her face fixed in an expression of icy, regal dignity. "I suppose I need to thank you, girl," she said.
"Why?" said Sanchia.
"When Orso came to me and said he needed a way to sneak a thief into the mountain, I realized right away that if Tomas caught this thief, he'd likely take them somewhere safe. And the safest place would likely also be where he'd hidden my father's collection." She turned to the table covered in artifacts. "Which I'd been seeking for some time. Looks like it's all here."
It was you who backstabbed us," said Sanchia.
You tipped Tomas off that I'd be coming.
I told a person to tell a person to tell a person close to Tomas to be on alert, said Estelle. It wasn't personal. Surely you understand that. But a creature such as you must be accustomed to being used as a tool by your betters. I'd have hoped Tomas would have given you a quick death, though.
She sighed, slightly put out. Now I'll have to decide how to deal with you.
At the mention of her death, Sanchia focused back on the shackles, asking,
Listen, is the secret restricted by time?
No.
Is the...
He thought so much of himself, you know, Estelle said, looking at Tomas. He thought scrivers were pale, weak fools. He hated how much he depended on them. He wished to operate in a world of conquest and conflict, a savage world that substituted gold for blood. She tutted. Not a man of reflection, then. And when he started finding such valuable designs in Tribuno's chambers, strings of sigils that just mysteriously appeared overnight, he rejoiced, and he never reflected on where they came from.
You made the gravity plates? Asked Sanchia, surprised.
I made it all, said Estelle, eyes locked on Tomas's. I did everything for him. Through hints and nudges, over years and years, I led him to my father's Occidental collection. I used my father to feed him my scrying innovations. Listening rigs, gravity plates, and much, much more. I got him to do everything I could not, everything that I was not allowed to do. She leaned close to Tomas's frozen face. I have done more than you, so much more than you, with you acting as an obstacle every step of the way, with you castigating me, and ignoring me, and grabbing me, and... She paused and swallowed. This Sanchia understood well.
He thought you his property, she said.
A regrettable heirloom, perhaps, said Estelle quietly.
But no matter. I took that and made an advantage of it as best I could. I've rarely had the luxury of pride, so perhaps it didn't hurt quite as much as it should have.
Sanchia looked at Tomas and saw he was now strangely bent in places. He was like an iron drum that had been crinkled and crumpled after a few years of hard use.
What the hell are you doing to him? Asked Sanchia.
I am subjecting him to the same thing he and my father subjected me to, said Estelle. Pressure.
Sanchia pulled a face, watching as Tomas appeared to retract. Just ever so slightly.
So his gravity, every 30 seconds it increases by a tenth, said Estelle.
So as it accelerates, its acceleration accelerates.
And he still feels everything, said Estelle softly.
Oh my God, said Sanchia, appalled.
Why do you react with such horror? Don't you wish this man dead for what he did to you? For capturing you, for beating you, for slashing your head open?
Sure I do, said Sanchia. Man's a shit, but that doesn't mean you're decent. I mean, even though I might sympathize with you, that doesn't mean you're going to let me go, does it? I'd ruin your chance to get it all that money.
For money? Said Estelle. Oh, girl, this isn't for money.
Besides that and killing Tomas, what could it have been about? Or is a Candiano a Candiano? You think you can make Occidental tools? You'll succeed where your father failed?
Estelle smiled coldly. Forget Occidental tools. What no one knows is, who were the Hierophants? How did they get to be what they were? The answer was there in front of my father's face the whole time. And I'd solved it ages ago. He never listened to me, and I knew Tomas wouldn't. Yet I needed the resources to prove it.
She paced around Tomas again. A collection